Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
And I'm delighted now to welcome, well, actor, writer, I think a renaissance man really, Robert Sheehan. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Brendan. Good to see you.
And we're going to talk a little bit about your life through music. But just first, so people will know you from screen acting and Love, Hate and Umbrella Academy and all that kind of stuff. But you love the theatre, I know. And you're starting a new Marco Rowe play, Reunion, on Friday. So I was wondering, where are you at in yourself now, if you new show on Friday? You've never done it before. Are you kind of relaxed? Are you edgy? Are you?
There's always an element of edge, you know, approaching day one.
Yeah.
But what, in this case, I think I'm feeling mostly good about it because we, you know, the 10 actors, Mark, who's directing the thing, Landmark Productions, who's producing the thing, we've run it now, I think, 5 times.
It's in your body at this stage
yeah,
almost.
Like you
don't feel like this thing hanging over you that you have to do for the first time on Friday.
Not majorly, massively, no. I think, you know, at a certain point, I think you have to reward yourself the comfort of preparation and say, well, it's there now, we've done it and we're across every little niggly bit and we've worked out the kinks. So,
so then,
but there's always, you can't ever get rid of that sort of that kind of bristly anticipation.
So will it largely happen for you automatically then on the night kind of thing, or how does that work?
Well, you could. Do you know what? The last and final kind of unpredicted element is always the audience that comes in, you know.
Yeah.
And I just previously did a stage adaptation of With Neil and I in the UK, and the audiences were just like mad different every single night. And so you kind of, and the audience kind of became our fascination. So we're all quite, we're all really sort of eager to see what the audiences will give us. Do you know what I mean?
Because, so are you, you're noticing them like, yeah?
Oh yeah, 100%. Because you kind of have to, you're kind of in a contract with them for the
for the, are you seeing particular people? Are you just feeling a general energy off them, or are you
you're
kind
feeling
of
feeling mental energy off them, or you're feeling sometimes a sort of absence of energy off them, and then you have to be conscious of not trying to pull the energy out of them too much, because you can kind of derail yourself slightly, you know.
Okay, so sort of like start hamming it up massively,
yeah, exactly,
and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and might you get cross with them then as well? Then if you're not getting it off them,
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think if you do get cross with them, sometimes it's your own failing, you know, because you can't control the audience and what they do. Like, for example, you mentioned Endgame, and that was 2 years ago in the gate. And one night there was a gentleman came in, he sat in the front row and he took out a torch and he had the script of Endgame in his hand, and he didn't look at us once for the whole show. He just made sure we said
he was there on behalf
word.
Of Beckett.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's like Beckett's agent there sat in the front row.
Okay, so, we'll come back to the play. So your music choices, I must say, quite the selection, fair play. And you gave us plenty of options as well.
Went from fast to slow and back again.
So I was looking at them and I was thinking, you're not your average kind of punter, are you?
Why, what does your average punter suggest?
I don't know, but you're not, are you?
I don't know. I suppose I live in my subjective reality and I can't tell what other people do, you know, when it comes to. But certainly, you know, the mainstream pop fluff doesn't massively intrigue me.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot of dance music on the list. Was that your tribe when you were a kid? What kind of young fellow were you?
I loved dance music and still do. Absolutely love dance music. I think I got a love of dance music kind of through my older brother, who used to buy all those Euphoria albums, CDs, hard house, like mad stuff. And then, you know, over the years, just kept listening to dance music. And it's just, dance music would be sort of attached to moving, you know, if it was like exercising or walking or, you know what I mean, stick on a bit of dance music and you just get this mad power up through you. I love it. I think, same with writing, I think rhythm is my thing.
Yeah?
You know, when I was a kid, I used to play the Bowron a lot and I loved it. I tried playing a few more melodic instruments, but I wasn't as good at them. I liked the Bowron. And writing, the writing kind of pops for me when I find the rhythm of it, you know? And dance music is, you know, 90% rhythm.
Okay, and your first choice is a recent one. I actually didn't know DJ Cam was still on the go, but this is DJ Cam, Parisian Drum Cartel, Robert Sheehan's first choice today. Dump around, you know, borrow friend gone on. Obviously, we could keep going there, but we get the gist of it. What's it about that? What does that do for you?
It's just a filthy, filthy dance tune with a great beat.
Yeah, you know, so physical again. Yeah,
yeah, that's a real car tune for me. I love sticking that on the car and banging it up.
So as a kid, your father was a guard, which we might imagine, it's a stereotype, we might imagine he was strict and conservative and everything. But I get the impression your parents were very supportive of kind of you doing you, were they?
Yeah. Just to give you a sense, I don't know if my dad will thank me for telling you this on the radio, but I told this the other day in the rehearsal room, how once he was fined by his superior, whatever, because he'd gone a number of weeks without issuing any parking fines or subpoenas or anything, or arrests. And eventually they were like, Sheehan, something's got to be happening out there, so just go out there and issue a parking fine or something.
Okay.
So he wasn't like, I don't think he was in the guards for to exercise his power and authority over other people.
Okay, I hope he's okay with that. That story, you're not getting us in trouble there. And you started acting quite young, as a teenager, kind of, which normally doesn't end well, does it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I did a film when I was 14. Irish people probably remember that film, Song for a Raggy Boy.
Of course, yeah.
So there was 11 or 12 of us cast, and we went down to Ballyvourney, down to this old De La Salle Brothers Christian boarding school, which I think they were about to renovate and do up. And the production ran in there and went, please don't. We need it to look like 1939. So we shot there for 5 or 6 weeks and had a ball, you know, considering the stressful and awful sort of story we were telling. We had a glorious summer, a really formative summer.
In what way?
In a way of wanting to act more.
Yeah.
You know, wanting to kind of do that again. That thing of, I think it was the thrill of working in an adult, you know, an adult workplace, you know, and getting sort of having friendships with older people and, you know, being sort of inducted into the adult world, you know, in a like sort of. It just kind of, obviously we were chaperoned and we were kind of kept, you know, the kids were sort of, you know, we all stayed in local houses and, you know, we had tutors and stuff. Not tutors, sorry, but chaperones because it was summertime. But still there was this thing of mixing with, you know, adults who like from Germany and the UK and Ireland, and there was this sense of the whole world in one place, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And the next song you've chosen is Cathy Davey and Swing It. But, and I think it brings you back to a year or two after that, you were in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was acting again. I was doing a TV series for a, I think now defunct, sort of quasi-Christian Canadian channel called PAX.
Good man.
And and it was
That sort of... That was the last wholesome part you played, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hung up my wholesome boots and moved on to the other after that. But it it was good fun, like, but I was out there alone, you know, for many, many months. Alone in the sense that I was being tutored. I was only maybe shooting something 1, maybe 2 days a week. And I'd sort of legally, by rights, the law is in Canada that you have to do, I think, 3 or 4 hours of tutoring per day minimum to keep up with your school. So the rest of the time I was kind of at home, or I was just wandering around the sort of vast suburbia of outer Vancouver, and I had this MP3 player and I only managed to get like 4 or 5 albums onto it, and then it kind of broke or I sort of forgot how to do it or something, but I couldn't get any more music either on or off it. But this Cathy Davey album was one of the albums that I had on it, Something Ilk, and I just listened to it about 1,000 times, you know. So
this, you were lonely.
Yeah, I was extremely lonely. Yeah, and this this song represents the whole album, Kathy.
Okay, so this is Kathy Davies, Swing It, Robert Sheehan's second choice today. Okay, that's Kathy Davies, Swing It, and that is actor Robert Sheehan's second choice today. A lot of the songs you gave us in the long list seem to kind of remind you of home or about being away from home. Mm. Obviously, you travel a lot for work and stuff. Are you happiest home?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I live in Ireland. It took me a while. It took me into my 30s to realise that I kind of needed to be in Ireland, you know.
Kind of among your own, like
yeah, the cultural tempo and the relaxedness and the familiarity of it, you know, all of the above. Yeah,
are you not like you were in LA for a while, you were in London for a long time? Are you not fully yourself when you're in those other environments?
You know, I think we only own a percentage of ourselves, whatever that means, you know, and the rest is the property of the environment that you're in, you know. So you kind of. You know, maybe a lot of people in the world leave where they were born, their place of origin, and they find somewhere else, and they flourish, and they find a more of a wholeness, more of a sense of self there. But and I always, you know, I always loved being away. I loved the self that I found there, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I got to a stage of life where I realized that I was kind of. Playing a kind of, it was like I was pretending I didn't know something about myself by living in London, you know. And that thing was that I was this sort of, I was kind of cultivating a sort of subtly, a kind of contrarian outsider sense of self or something. Something that is kind of other to the central machinery of London, you know. And there's a lot of Irish people, I think, like that who live in the UK who would consider themselves fiercely Irish and yet live there, vote there, pay taxes there and spend their present moment is there. Mm. You think, well, what version of yourself are you holding on to, you know?
So you're living down in Ballydehob now, are you? Full-time?
Not far from there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was down there recently, actually. And every time I go, it's become more hipster. It's kind of like Williamsburg at this stage, isn't it? There was a coffee shop this time, and there were two really cool people in there, right? A new coffee
Just
shop.
Just two.
And that's one well, more they, than the they last were time. The people running it, yeah. And I was saying, so how's it going? And she said, yeah, well, it's an art space as well. And she said, so he does a lot of music. And I think she said, and I didn't question. Because it was so great, she said, and I do acting and sewing.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant, yeah. But it does seem to be becoming a bohemian enclave, is it?
It is becoming. I mean, it's become that since, I think, the 70s, you know. And it's interesting how this person said acting and sewing and shop, because that's real common down there as well. Everybody has two, maybe three, maybe four jobs. You know, so you get these very sort of adaptable and creative people, you know, who live down there. Really, really interesting.
And have you found a kind of a tribe there that you can relax amongst?
You know.
And do you live on your own?
No, I live with my missus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
And the dog.
Yeah. So are you settled now? Yeah.
I wouldn't go that far. But I tried, but then, you know, then more cool jobs came along and I went, well, I've got to do that.
Okay. But in terms of the cool jobs, you did seem to, your career obviously took off then. Misfits, Love, Hate made a kind of stars of a whole new generation here. And then you started doing big movies, nearly big movies. Did you kind of at some point then decide, actually, I'm not sure that this path is for me?
Well, no, I mean, I'm still on it, you know, but what I've, I suppose I've diversified the path a small bit.
Yeah.
I've got my second book out now in September. And the good thing about being creative and writing books is that you're not, it's not location specific, you know. It doesn't mean leaving home to go and do your art.
Okay.
And that's a big part of the joy of writing books for me. It's a, and the kind of just the sort of sourceness of it, you know, acting needs a production, needs a landmark theatre, it needs a director, it needs a thing that's been commissioned, it needs a budget, it needs other actors, it needs a room, and you know, in order for you to step up and actually yeah. express yourself in the way that you, whereas, you know, writing, you just sit at home and procrastinate for several hours and then write something. And,
yeah, okay, I'll ask you about the book in a sec, but I want to play one more song first.
Work away.
This is a song that you say gives you the tingles, Declan O'Rourke, Gold Bars in the Summer.
Oh, beautiful song, yeah. I think this song, I suspect this song is about Kinvara in Galway.
Where he lives, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he lives there, yeah.
Okay, let's take a blast of it. Declan O'Rourke, Gold Bars in the Sun.
There's a girl in a town that I love. I wish I could stay there the rest of my life. But life has a habit, and love has a way of making you move when you just want to stay. I'm in love with a town, it runs in my blood. I wish I could stay, but I can't have them both. It's a slow, quiet place. She thinks we're too young, but I like the pace. Just rolling along.
That's Declan O'Rourke there, Gold Bars in the Sun, and that's Robert Sheehan's third choice for us today. Now, you mentioned your book, Robert.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, a lot of the songs you picked on your long list as well were around meditation.
Oh, yeah.
So meditation is, and the new book is called Playing Dead, How Meditation Brought Me Back to Life.
Yeah.
Did meditation literally kind of save you, change your life?
Yeah. It did, yeah.
What point did you come to it?
I think it was sort of ironic because I was achieving good success on the acting road. So I was jumping from job to job, place to place. And the more I jumped, the kind of more restless, unhappy, impatient I was becoming. Because I was going from sort of, you know, rental to rental to rental. I was trying to conduct a relationship, which wasn't going very well. I was alone a lot and trying not to be alone. Was sort of desperate to not be alone, do you know, that kind of way. And eventually I got to a place, we were shooting nights on this film and then there was a big snowstorm and we all got basically told to stay at home and for about 3 days. And about 12 hours into this, I was like climbing the walls and really miserable on my own. And I was just thinking, why is this? Why can't I just be, you know? Why can't I just be without needing to see people or needing to go out, needing to blah, blah, blah. And I just sat down and started a very shaky meditation practice at that point. And that was like the beginning of 2017. And that's the kind of jump off point of the book. Yeah, because I was genuinely lonely and miserable and sort of confused, because since starting as a young person and I think unconsciously had told myself, this is the thing that will make me happy, you know,
oh,
do this
okay.
thing
yeah.
and it will mean success both inner and outer, you know.
Yeah.
But the more the outer success was happening, the less successful I was feeling inside, you know what I mean? So I had to kind of come clean to myself that the plan I'd made, either consciously or possibly unconsciously when I was very young, which had to do with, I think, other people's approval more so than making art, you know, at that hour of my life,
okay,
was not working. It was actually doing the opposite.
So how meditation, has it changed you?
Well, meditation was kind of sitting down and looking at all the incoherence and looking at all the impulses to do things or the impulses to criticise myself or, you know, all of the, yeah, the sort of holographic interference that's going on inside yourself. If you stop and for a couple of minutes and you sort of, the lens zooms out far enough, which you start seeing, you know, the activity inside your mind and inside your body. And then the practice became about kind of not judging any of it and being permissive with it and forgiving myself for having it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And being nice to myself. And after about a year, the incoherence was sort of still there, but it had reduced. And what had kind of replaced it was this beautiful, broadening, expanding sense of space around it, which was allowing me to be more, like we just spoke about briefly before this interview, to be in the present moment and not be sort of dragged out of it by the impulse to do something or to, you know,
or
be heard
or, thinking
or be seen. Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
To be able just to listen and settle in oneself for longer periods of time is a huge, huge gift. And it's a gift that is, it's hard to have that gift, especially in the modern world where you've got phones and screens and extremely up-to-date news and all the stuff, you know, that's constantly being thrown at us.
So if I'd met you now before you started meditating, how would you have been different to what you are now?
I think I would have been a lot more nervous physically and then trying to curtail the symptoms of the anxiety while presenting a kind of normal person to you. Do you know what I mean? Anyway.
Okay.
So it was before, you know, there's a lot of discoveries I made through meditation about why I was doing what I was doing. And one of the things was going for auditions would be the source of enormous anxiety for me, you know. And I couldn't fully put my finger on why, but after a while I realised that it wasn't that I wanted to get the job. It really wasn't that. Like, I wasn't going, I have to get this job. It was, I have a chance here to recreate the religious transcendent experience I had in my very first audition. And that was the kind of one of the things that set me on the road of acting was the audition for that film Song for a Raggy Boy, or the last audition, where something happened where I expressed an enormous amount of emotional vulnerability in front of these strangers. And then sort of when I kind of came back to the room and I was tearful and shaking and looking around, I could see the sort of approval on their faces, like I'd done something that they wanted me to do, you know, but at the same time was intensely ashamed and embarrassed by the sort of social norms that I'd broken by showing vulnerability. And it was like the audition room became a kind of, dare I say, church where it was a place possible to achieve a sense of freedom from myself, you know, as a younger person. But the selfness and the anticipation of approaching that room was like an avalanche, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was sort of, it was a strange kind
so
of paradox.
A lot of pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
Can you act now without turning yourself inside out too much?
Yes, I can. I can, yeah. I mean, I hold myself to a higher standard, which means I have to work harder to get to a place, like, let's say, for example, with Landmark's Reunion, where I feel happy and comfortable throughout the entire route, or my route, of the play. And so that requires sort of looking out and looking in forensically at the same time as I go through and looking for little niggles and discomforts, which if you don't catch them at the beginning and you kind of become wedded to them as the run goes on, they get larger and larger thorns in your side, you know.
So it kind of, it brings us back to meditation in a way. The acting thing is about finding that flow and being present in each moment.
Absolutely.
With the reality of what's there in front of you as well. Yeah.
And acting, you know, if you break it down, is acting natural while watching yourself acting natural.
Yeah.
You know, which is extremely unnatural.
And so are you there or not?
Well, you sort of have to figure out, you have to kind of do a double think, where at first it's uncomfortable when you're kind of learning the play or the part, or where you're both not there and there, But at a certain point, you know, memory goes from explicit to implicit, and you are just there, you know, and you, like riding a bicycle, you don't have to think about it, you don't have to recall it per se, you do it unconsciously. So the character becomes more of an embodied thing as opposed to a recall thing. And so in
you're
the book,
you're right in it.
Yeah, you know, you are. I mean,
you are that person in that moment.
Absolutely. You know, if I ever fall out of it in a kind of a moment of unpleasant self-awareness,
yeah,
the only thing that I have to do is just listen to you, and then I go right back into
okay,
it.
Okay, takes you back.
That's
right.
It's
so if you start thinking it all up there, you're screwed, yeah?
You are, but you are, especially if you start thinking too much. But if you go, oh, I'm thinking too much, I'm acting too much, I'll just listen to Brendan and then on his next line. And then you just go,
bang,
you go
bang.
Right back into it. And you kind of disappear in a sense, or that sense of duality disappears, you know.
That's fascinating. That's really well. I've never heard anyone explain acting as well as that before. Yeah, I mean, it's mind bending, and I imagine it must completely mess your head up in a way. Like, it's a crazy thing to do. But at
the
same time,
the older
yeah.
you get, the more you're playing pretend other people. It kind of, that part of it gets harder.
Yeah, yeah.
The more you become yourself.
Okay, listen, we better get back to your music. You picked various options for meditation song. We've gone with yeah. Subtle Body by Vila Brasilia because you obviously have very intense experiences meditating. You experience time space differently when you listen to this, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I'm really fascinated by Einstein's notion of the theory of relativity, you know, where there's a certain thing of subjective time, one's sense of time passing, and then objective time that we get from atomic clocks, you know,
yeah,
and how those two things can be wildly different, you know.
You think it's elastic, yeah?
Yeah, I think I do. I absolutely do. And, you know, so does modern science, and so does, you know, one's own personal sense of it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so you're not crazy. You're not alone on that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm bringing up the language of authority to kind of take it out of the language of woo woo. You know? And that's
okay.
What the book does, and it's a bit about acting. But that's the book.
So you back it all up with science.
Yeah,
in the book. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know, popular science that's there, and it's what's thrilling for me is the world of quote spirituality. And the world of science are sort of saying the same thing. And I give lots of examples of that throughout
okay.
the book.
And just before we get to the music, if someone gets this book, do you bring them through how they might start to practice kind of thing and everything?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
so
you're not doing it claiming any huge authority on this.
No.
You're just saying this was my...
This worked for me. Very humbly and humorously.
Okay, here's Subtle Body by Vila Brasilia. Be careful you don't experience time-space differently while this is on. We're moving on. We could keep it going. All they could actually just play this kind of stuff for the day, and it would calm the whole country down. But anyway,
yeah,
that was Subtle Body by Vila Brasilia.
That's another thing. It's at the end of the book, calming an entire population down by using a small amount of people meditating.
This
that's
is the TM thing. Notion that a certain critical mass group of people.
Yeah, square root of 1% of the population.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure what I think about that, but I definitely
reduce
think
violent crime and increase peace and harmony and stuff.
Okay. I'll talk to you about the play now, but I wanted to ask you first. The final season of Umbrella Academy is coming out next month. So I'd never watched it, And I watched it during the week, and you're clearly having a ball. You like play, like I'm thinking of Whitnail as well. Do you like playing these kind of, I don't know, non-binary-ish, effeminate, kind of louche kind of characters, yeah?
Seems to be what I'm suited to, Brendan, yeah. Seems to be what I'm suited to. I like those characters who are, you know, talking in meditation terms, kind of emotionally incoherent, because there's a lot of territory you can go into and play with, and there's a lot of ways to play something. You know, I think if someone's more together in themselves, well, I don't know if that's true maybe, but there's a lot of...
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
You can be more untethered perhaps with those characters, you know.
Yeah. Are you glad Umbrella Academy's over now, or...
Well, it's always a kind of a mixed bag of emotion where, like, we were wedded to that for... since the end of 2017, you know, and our kind of, excuse me, our obligation to it will be up in September of 2024. So that's a kind of a, I suppose, as an actor, it's a long time to be on one thing. So in that sense, it's exciting to kind of finish off something and be completely free contractually and going forward. Whereas at the same time, that show has been insanely good to me, you know, really good to me.
And
in all the ways, like Netflix distribution has just, it's done wonders.
Can't beat a bit of Netflix, can you, for the worldwide?
For the worldwide, it's changed things altogether.
Tell me about the play Reunion then. Everybody loves a dysfunctional family gathering. It's a kind of a classic trope of Irish plays as well.
It is, yeah. And this is... this is kind of this is writing of great subtlety, I'd say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a family who are grown, you know, the kids are all, like, I'm one of the kids and I have two sisters, and we all bring our partners back to the holiday home that we used to go to when we were kids with our parents, and our dad has passed on and our mother's there. So our mother is, she's the matriarch, and she's sort of arranged this reunion for the family. And we all come back with the best intentions, you know. And I think it's a play about how if there are unresolved things amongst members of a family, the family becomes very brittle, you know. And any kind of unexpected thing coming in can bring out the old ghosts and the old demons that they're unable to bring out without screaming at each other, you know. So it's just this beautifully, very specifically written piece about family, you know.
And okay. How that goes. It sounds brilliant, actually.
It is, yeah, it's really
good. Okay, and that's Mark O'Rourke's new play, Reunion. It's produced by Landmark Productions and Galway International Arts Festival, and it runs from the 12th to the 27th of July as part of the Galway Arts Festival at the Black Box Theatre. More information on gaif.ie. The book is called Playing Dead, How Meditation Brought Me Back to Life. And we're going to finish on your last song.
Oh, yeah.
And we're back where we started with the dance tune. This one's by a friend of yours.
Yeah, this is by an English guy called Tim Digby Bell. And Tim is probably most known for an electronic music band called Cubicolor, which have garnered success in recent times. And this is his sort of part of his solo project. This is a big exclusive as well, Brendan, because his solo stuff has never been heard ever in
okay,
the public
sphere. Okay, so Tallboy gave us this to play today.
Indeed,
okay.
He did.
And it's called Kairos. Do you know what Kairos means? I looked it up because I've heard it in connection with religion before. A time when the conditions are right for the accomplishment of a crucial action.
Whoa.
Isn't that brilliant? That's I didn't brilliant. Know there was a word for that, and it's definitely a thing that exists.
Is it ancient Greek?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think there used to be a Catholic communications or publishing company called Kairos in Ireland. Cool. Listen, Robert Sheehan, it's been fantastic talking to you. I hope you'll come back again, will you?
I would love to.
I feel there's a lot more we could delve into.
I'm sure we could. We could natter on for ages. Let's do a live road show from Ballydehob.
Exactly. From the coffee shop. Yeah, we can do sewing and acting. Okay. Robert Sheehan, thank you very much. And we leave you with your final choice. Bye, tall boy. World exclusive, Kairos. Silence.
Email brendan@rte.ie.